Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
In this edition of the Football History Headlines, we take a quick look at football in the last six seasons of the 19th century, 1895 to the year 1900. Football History Rewind, where we take a look at year-by-year approach of football history in American football, is coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, your portal to positive football history, and welcome to the Football History Rewind, where we go through football history one year at a time. And we are all the way up at the end of the 19th century. And we covered some bases the late 1890s, but I wanted to sort of put a capper on that and tell you a little bit about what was happening and transpiring, and especially in the collegiate and the professional levels of football. Now, we know that 1892 was the first paid player. We talked about that. The Allegheny Athletic Association paying Pudge Heffelfinger, among others, to play in a game against the Pittsburgh club. And we want to make sure that we cover what happened in 1895, too. The newly crowned champions of the latter half of the decade, as well as the professional teams that had some outstanding events happen. So 1895, the previous part of the decade saw Yale, Princeton, and even Harvard battling for the nation's top spot in the gridiron hierarchy. And it all changed in 1895 as the University of Pennsylvania's Football 11 rose new heights. Yes, the Penn Quakers, under head coach George Woodruff, finished with an unmatched record in 1895 of 14 wins and zero losses, and was retroactively named the national champion by the Holgate System, National Championship Foundation, Helms Athletic Foundation, and the Billingsley Report, and was a co-national champion, according to Park H. Davis. The Quakers outscored their opposition by the tune of 480 points for and only 24 against. Their closest game happened in the second-to-last contest of the season against Harvard, when Penn escaped with a 17-14 victory over the Crimson. Now, Park H. Davis said they were a co-champion, and he was the sole selector of Yale as a co-champion with Penn. The Bulldogs had an unblemished record of 13 wins, 0 losses, and 2 ties, with the ties happening against the Boston Athletic Club and Brown University. Now, Casper Whitney and Walter Camp once again selected an All-America team, and 10 of the 11 players played for either Harvard, Princeton, or Yale. The lone exception was Cornell's fine quarterback, Clint Wyckoff. Now, let's not forget about John Brailleur playing some professional football in 1895. For 80 years, he was thought to be the very first paid player when he got $10 for leaving his college game and going and playing some pro football around Pittsburgh. But we have some great stories on John Brailleur and some of our scandals and scoundrels and some early football. So let's move on to 1896. Another newcomer to the top spot in collegiate football occurred in 1896. In week 2 of the season, the Princeton Tigers tied Lafayette and ended up being an omen for the season's finish, as these two teams shared a national championship, according to the National Championship Foundation and Park H. Davis. Holgate, Billingsley, and the Helms Athletic Foundation found favor in calling out Princeton as the sole winner. And I think Davis and the NCF got it right, as these two teams, when they tied, they faced each other and crushed all other opponents they played, ending up with an identical 11-0-1 record. So I think a co-championship was duly in order. In the professional football scene, the Pro Football Hall of Fame tells us that the first team of all paid players took the field for the Allegheny Athletic Association near Pittsburgh for a two-game abbreviated season. The club decided not to field a team in 1895 after an investigation by the Amateur Athletic Union, AAU, was launched after accusations that swirled that the AAA players were being paid. Fearing that having a pro status would discourage any opponents from playing them, they sat out a year and then dipped their toes into pro water in 1896 after they knew that the AAU was suspending them from amateur competition. Knowing full well what was coming, the AAA emptied the treasury of the club to buy players' contracts such as Pudge Heffelfinger and others to get a couple of games in. On consecutive days, the Allegheny Athletic Association defeated the Pittsburgh Athletic Club and Duquesne Country and Athletic Club, both by means of shutouts. Then these two games, after they were done, the pro football turmoil and the AAU suspension had upset the club so much that the sport was dropped altogether by the membership. So we move on to 1897. Once again, we had co-champions. They were selected years later by experts, choosing Yale and Penn to the top spot. Yale, with its 9-0-2 mark, was picked by only one entity, Mr. Park H. Davis, as national champion. I think he was a little bit of a homer towards Yale. Their ties were against Army and Harvard. And all selectors, the other selectors, took a more obvious choice, the Penn Quakers, who were a perfect 15-0 for their record. I have to stand with the Helms and National Championship Society and some of the other ones that Penn Quakers 15-0 versus a 9-0-2 Yale, only picked by Park H. Davis. I'm not sure that's quite true. So I would have to lean towards the Penn Quakers probably being the national champions in 1897. On the pro circuit, well, the La Trobe Athletic Association fielded an all-professional team, and unlike the Allegheny Athletic Association a year prior we just talked about, they were the first pro team to complete a full season. Remember, the AAA only played two games in 1896. 1897, La Trobe's Athletic Association played a full schedule, all-pro players, first team to compete for a full season with the professional level. 1898, the decision was not clear-cut and unanimous for the next season for the Collegiate National Championship. Co-champions Princeton and Harvard had to share the honor. Harvard had a perfect 11-0-0 record, defeating their nemesis Yale 17-0 in the season finale, and they didn't face Princeton that year. The Tigers, they sported an 11-0-1 record, with their tie coming against Army in a 5-all stalemate late in the season. Drexel was also a perfect at 7-0, along with many teams that were 2-0 and 3-0 across the country. You know, you say, why would teams only play two games or three games? Well, football was just starting up a lot of, around the country. It was just starting to spread in the southern and western states. So they couldn't get a lot of games in. They didn't have a lot of interest in the players. They're just trying to get something developed. And some of them even played in the spring instead of the fall. You know, it wasn't truly a fall sport like it is now. So that's some interesting things. So they only got two games in because of the competition they could find. Also in 1898, on December 3rd, the La Trobe Athletic Association's manager, Dave Barry, recruited some of the best players from teams local to the Pittsburgh area in order to play a team of some of the nation's best players assembled by the Duquesne Country and Athletic Club. Well, this was the first recorded playing of two professional all-star teams in pro football. Duquesne won that contest 16-0 at Exposition Park in Allegheny City, which is now the north side of the city of Pittsburgh. We move on to 1899, a repeat in the next year as the official NCAA Division I football records recorded at Harvard and Princeton as being selected sharing the national championship title. Sewanee had a great season to note, going undefeated with only 13 players on the roster, but outscoring their opponents 322-10 with a 12-0 record in the Southern Intercollegiate Athletic Association. The University of Chicago under Amos Alonzo Stagg also had a strong showing that year, posting a 16-0-2 record. The Maroons' ties were against tough Iowa and Penn teams, but four of the wins were against local high school competition. Also that year in Chicago, Chris O'Brien formed as a neighborhood football team called the Morgan Athletic Club. Joe Ziemba has talked about this on his podcast. He's come on and talked to us about it too. They would be, Morgan Athletic Club would eventually morph into the Cardinals franchise in the NFL, which still plays to this day as the Arizona Cardinals. It's the oldest running franchise with the same name, the Cardinals. And they started in 1899 with Chris O'Brien. I'll move on to the 1900. William C. Temple became the first individual to own a pro football club when he took over the payments of the Duquesne Country and Athletic Club team. That's what happened in the pro level. At the college level, John Heisman, you know that name, the Heisman Trophy, he coached Clemson to a 6-0 record and was probably the top team in the South in college football that year. But the South football wasn't as strong as the Northeast was at that time. Yale doubled the amount of the Tigers' victories, with being 12-0, and had played a little bit better competition and more established region in the game of football in the year 1900. Also in college football, Iowa and Indiana joined the Western Conference, which was the precursor to the modern Big Ten Conference. As a matter of fact, with those two joining, it took them up to 9 teams, and those two additions gave the Western Conference the nickname by many of being called the Big Nine, and eventually that led to the name change of Big Nine Conference, which again morphed into the Big Ten Conference, even though they have like 12 or 14 teams now. Who can keep track of that? But they're still the Big Ten to us now. So hopefully that gets you caught up at the end of the 19th century in both pro football and college football. When we come back, we'll go into the beginning of the 20th century in football history. Our next edition of the Football History Rewind will come in between Christmas and New Year's, and we look forward to talking to you about that because there's some great things that happened in the 20th century, as you well know. So till tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.